This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
If you have not been outside yet, you got some different fall weather. You know what? It's fall, y'all. I've been waiting to say that, and finally I can. It's fall, y'all. Highs of only 65 today, and then 63 tomorrow, 66 on Saturday, warming up to 76 on Sunday. Looking ahead to Thanksgiving, highs of 74 with a 40% chance for showers next Thursday, a week from today. But between now and then, some cool weather, so enjoy it. Right now it's 48 degrees, a lot colder than that in Russia. And Mark Katz joins us now, a professor of government and politics at the George Mason University Schar School of Policy and Government and a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Great. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. I'm sorry the introduction took up all of our time, and we'll try it again next time. Let's talk about what's going on with Ukraine and Russia, and it seems as though, you know, I was reading this story, and I'm thinking that it seems as though both sides are making, well, maybe all three sides, I guess, because you got Ukraine, you got the United States and Russia trying to make moves to get the war wrapped up before former President Trump comes in. I don't know if that's a way to end a war or not. Tell me what's going on, if we can, if you will, please, rather.
Well, I don't think the war is going to end that quickly, but I do think there's a possibility that it could end next year. And I think you're absolutely right that Certainly, Putin on the one hand and the Ukrainian government and certainly the Biden administration are both trying to strengthen their hands. In other words, it's like if everyone wants the war to end, we can agree on that. But what are the terms on which it's going to end? And I think that each side is sort of ratcheting things up. Obviously, the introduction of these thousands of North Korean troops into Russia has been quite a shock. And so I think that's what triggered the Biden administration to allow Ukraine to use these Army tactical missile system known as ATACMS hitting into Russian territory.
Let me take a step back for people who were so wrapped up in the U.S. election, they kind of lost track of what was going on there. What prompted North Korea to get involved in this, and why would Putin and Russia want North Korea involved?
Well, I think for Putin, there's that the more troops from other countries, that means sort of the fewer Russians that have to be fighting. You know, he has suffered hundreds of thousands of casualties. Russian tactics are extremely wasteful of human life, and that this is something that they at some point, it's not that they're going to run out of men, but that they're going to have to resort to conscription. That'd be highly unpopular. So if you can get the North Koreans to fight, that's fine. Now, why they're doing it, it's actually at a seminar yesterday downtown Washington. And basically, the North Korean leader, he gets money. It's sort of estimated that each North Korean soldier is being paid $2,000 a month, and then most of that money is going to the government, to the North Korean government, not to the soldier. He has his own reasons for being willing to send his troops to North Korea, to Russia.
So what is the situation in Russia with the military and who serves and who doesn't? And are people, you talk about the Russian military strategy not being terribly considerate of human lives and just kind of feeding them into the grinder. Who would want to join the military in Russia? And what is the situation there, Professor?
Well, that's a good question, and it seems that they are, you know, pulling in something like 30,000 people a month, and you know, the people whom they're bringing in tend to be, you know, the very poor. Obviously, there's criminals. Now it appears that there are people just charged with crimes, and this is a way to avoid going to prison. You know, it's and they're being paid as well. In other words, that their families will get a payout, you know, if these people die, which they do in great numbers. So there's a, you know, so far he's been able to keep it up, but obviously this is you know, a really expensive way to fight a war. That's for sure.
What about losses? You know, keeping score. I hate to put it that way, but you got to look at raw numbers, I guess, and you got to look at the proportions. Ukraine and Russia. Who's taking the worst of it, or is there a way to determine that?
Well, yeah, there are people who focus just on this, and obviously Ukraine has far fewer people to lose, and so I think that's the calculation on the Russian side, is that they can take pain longer than Ukraine can. And I think still, you know, Ukraine, you know, the conscription age is, I think, 25, and that was, you know, that was actually lowered recently. In other words, they're not conscripting, you know, 18 through 24 year olds, you know, that would be really unpopular, but it's, you know, at some point they're going to have to do that, it seems to me.
Let me take a break, Professor. When we come back, I want to talk about this ICBM that Russia launched. I think when a lot of people hear intercontinental ballistic missile, they automatically jump to nuclear weapons, which is not the case here. If y'all have any questions or comments about what's going on between Russia and Ukraine, and we'll also, when we come back, get to how this thing's likely to wrap up and how do you decide the winner and what that looks like. You can text them into the Oakmont Jeweler Talk and text line at 504-260-1870. We're talking to Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at the George Mason University Schar School of Policy and Government, non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, and also how President Trump's administration could change what happens over there in opposition or as opposed to President Biden's administration. 620, time for traffic now, WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Professor Mark Katz. He's a professor of government politics at the George Mason University Schar School of Policy and Government, non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to Russia and Ukraine. President, professor, nothing can be said this day without an age, without a political prism, it seems like. Somebody texts in and says, stop this lame duck president from putting us into World War III. That comment aside, talk about the political implications, I guess, if you will, of Putin preferring to deal with Joe Biden or Donald Trump, Zelensky willing to deal or wanting to deal with Biden or Trump. Tell me about that whole troika, I guess.
Sure. Well, first of all, the Ukrainians are fed up with Biden. There was, yes, he supported them, but put so many limitations on them that they, in fact, a lot of Ukrainians are hopeful that Trump will actually do more. He'll do something more dramatic, that's for sure. You know, I think that a lot of this talk about, you know, World War III or whatever, the people who have objected to this, who support Trump, aren't the ones who are in top foreign policy making positions or been appointed to. What I think is telling is that Trump himself has not come out and criticized this move, nor has anyone whom he has appointed to State Department, Defense Department, Intelligence. In other words, the people who have done this, I think it's Don Jr., Marjorie Taylor Greene, they're not going to be doing foreign policy making, and as Trump's own communication director pointed out, that its official statements on this matter will come directly from President Trump or his authorized spokespeople, and I think this is very telling. I actually think that that this move, instead of limiting Trump, it actually helps him, that he can come into office. And Biden has done this, but Putin might not want to react strongly because he doesn't want to hurt his ties with Trump. So Trump can come in and argue that, well, it wasn't him that let Zelensky hit Russia with the ATACMS. But, if Putin wants Trump to reverse Biden's decision, well, then Putin needs to make some concessions of his own. So I actually think that, Biden and Trump, they talked for 2 hours. It strikes me that this may have been, if not, explicitly coordinated, that Trump knew what was going on.
And that would be in the best interest of the country. Certainly, when something like this is going on, you got a new administration coming in, which, if that's the case, Professor, that gives me hope and makes me feel good. Tell me about the ICBMs. People tend to link that with nuclear weapons, but that's not what Russia did, correct?
Correct. I mean, the Ukrainians have claimed this was an intercontinental ballistic missile. I don't think this has been confirmed yet. And also, of course, you can put a nuclear warhead on a missile that fires, any distance, with a short range, medium range, long range.
That's a good point. For Russia to launch a missile in Ukraine with a nuclear warhead, it doesn't have to be an ICBM.
Not at all. And I think it's, one can say, well, is this a warning that we could use ICBMs? Or is it just that they run out of other kinds of missiles, that this was the one that they had available? And I would, sort of the more sinister explanation is probably less likely than just the, spur of the moment kind of decision making might have been in effect here. So I wouldn't read too much into this ICBM story. A, we're not sure it was an ICBM, and B, they don't need an ICBM for launching nuclear weapons, that's for sure.
Professor, we only have a minute left, but the politics of this, to me, my I guess, ignorant analysis, that Putin has got to be sorry he started this, and now we got to find a way for him to gracefully exit. Is that accurate at all?
I think that's what he wants. I think we're now talking about the terms. I think what Trump has made clear is that, okay, Ukraine can't have, isn't going to get this territory that you occupy back, but that, Trump's or Putin's other demands, like Ukraine has to have a government friendly to Russia and maybe no link to NATO. I think that this is something that's open for debate. And I think what we're doing here now is arguing about the terms of the ceasefire and what position each side is going to be in.
And in a negotiation, obviously, people that know that even if you have somebody beat, sometimes in order to end it, you got to give them an out, right? Craft an out for them.
That's right. And so I think what people I think are also understanding is that Putin is in a desperate situation. I mean, he is losing so many men that at some point he's going to have to, his own military is not happy with having to lose so many men.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time as always. Hope you have a nice Thanksgiving. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, about the incoming President Trump administration. Time now, WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7. It's fall, y'all. Nice. Temperatures in the 40s outside, going up to only the upper 60, mid-60s today, 65 for a high, 63 tomorrow, 66 Saturday, 76 on Sunday. And then warming a little bit toward Thanksgiving, unfortunately, highs in the mid-70s with a 40% chance for showers, so not hot, but not really fall-like either. Somebody texted me yesterday, when are you going to have Andy Smith on, a guy from New Hampshire? When does he come on? Why hasn't he been on a long time? Well, he comes on just about once a week, and he does have a life. He does have things to tend to. We'd love to have him on 4 hours every day, but Andy, you do have other considerations, do you not?
I do. My wife probably thinks it'd be best if I were just out of the house, but that... you can't deal with that all the time.
Come on down. We'll hook you up.
All right.
We'll do a co-host thing. There's no pay. It'd be a volunteer position, just so you understand that.
Yes, indeed.
Let's talk about President Trump said he was going to shake up Washington, and Lord knows his cabinet picks are in the process, or at least intended to do that, I guess. Thoughts on what the former, President Trump and his cabinet picks?
Well, I think you're right that he has a lot of high visibility picks with essentially no governmental experience and being put in fairly important positions. And it's the TV people. So I kind of look at his picks as kind of the good, bad, and the ugly. The good are the kind of the typical picks. I don't mean good necessarily because of the people, but they're not really controversial. Putting Marco Rubio at State, John Ratcliffe at the CIA, Doug Burgum at Interior. You kind of reward the political people that have helped you out, and they're not that controversial. The problematic ones are the bad ones, and you have people like Lee Zeldin, kind of somebody who has never been known as an environmentalist, being put in EPA. Tulsi Gabbard, with some potential former Democrat, being put in the director of national intelligence. And there are a couple others like that, but the ugly ones are the ones that are really problematic. These are the ones that shake things up, and they're the ones that are going to cause the most problem getting through the Senate. Pete Hegseth at Defense, you know, the largest employer in the United States. And he's never really been a high-ranking person, doesn't really understand the way that bureaucracy works. Matt Gaetz at Attorney General, no experience to speak of as an attorney, very controversial issues in his past and lawsuits and ethics complaints. RFK Jr. at HHS, Linda McMahon at Education, Dr. Oz at Medicare and Medicaid. These are people that are his supporters, but largely they're TV people without experience. They're mouthpieces. My concern about those is if they have not had experience running these types of agencies or these types of bureaucracies, then the very thing that Trump wants to do, which is shake up the bureaucracies, isn't going to happen because those bureaucracies are going to go on autopilot, being run by the bureaucrats, not by the people at the top.
Yeah, talk about that, if you will. And you and I have had this conversation a lot, you know, going back to my old poli-sci days in college where, you know, presidents traditionally try to focus more on foreign policy than domestic policy because the bureaucracy is so big. And the bureaucrats in Washington, I don't necessarily mean this in a pejorative way, but their theory is kind of like when, no disrespect to anybody that works here, but let me make it a different place. It's like if a university gets a new president, the feeling is, you know, I got tenure. I don't care. I've been through five presidents. Go ahead, do whatever you want. To make it not a corporate setting, but to flip it over to your side, Andy, it's kind of like that, right? I mean, the bureaucracy is so ingrained. It's hard to come in for any one president to come in and think that they're going to change anything when there is a mindset of, okay, that's fine, that's your thing, but this is my thing, and I plan on being here for 20, 30 years. Thoughts?
Yeah, we just have inaugurated a new president last week, and I think this is about the fourth or the fifth strategic plan that's been initiated by
a new president. Wait, you're talking about the University of New Hampshire?
At the University of New Hampshire. Yeah. And so you hear the same sort of thing, and it's true that you can get maybe a few things done that are important, but you just can't push through a large number of things because the bureaucracy is just so difficult to push through. You can't fire people. They've got their ways of doing things. There's old friendships and animosities that you can't really deal with. But if you, as a president of the university, can get two or three things done, that's pretty successful. I think that same is true for a president. If you can get two or three major initiatives through as you're in your presidency, that's pretty good. Shaking up the bureaucracy is an incredibly hard thing to do. You have to have the bureaucracies on your side to accomplish these things. You don't want them opposed to you. And if they are opposed to you, then they basically can slow things down, slow walk things, just not prepare. You just are fighting against like a giant blob. You push it one place and it just absorbs the punch and it grows out the other side. So getting rid of the bureaucracy, cutting back on the bureaucracy is difficult. The bureaucracy has its own incentives, which are self-preservation.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. That's the ugly truth, but it is the truth. Whether and I would ask the people listening, Andy, to apply it to where they work. If it's a regional manager or a general manager or university president, whatever it is what it is. And another thing is that, you know, half of the people maybe were loyal to the old guy, and I'm not talking about necessarily the president of the United States, but the president or general manager or regional whatever, and they're kind of hoping that the new man or woman fails. That's the other part of it that is just human nature. 651, 9 till 7. You'd hope that everybody was on the same page, but that's not the way it always works. Traffic now, WWL. 6:57, beautiful fall morning, Thursday, November 1st, week out from Thanksgiving, talking to Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, about President Trump and his cabinet selections. Somebody texted in and said about dealing with the bureaucracy, Andy, so don't try. And that's not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is they're going to be up against challenges, and if you want to change something, not only do you have to run a massive department, but you have to kind of know how it works if you're going to change it, right? And change the parts that need changing and not the parts that don't?
Absolutely. I mean, just basic things like how do you put together the budget for the organization? Not knowing all of the different components of the organization, what it actually they do, which ones have competent people running them or not. You know, you don't know those things if you're an outsider. And then who do you rely on? Well, you rely on insiders. So then you have to have people on your team inside the organization who you can rely on. And that's frankly counter to what most of these people want to do when they get into the organizations. So you're just put in a very difficult position as a manager to be able to find people that you can trust who can actually pull off the things that you want to do, because you, as a good manager, you recognize that what you want to do may not be in the interest of what even your allies within the organization want you to do, let alone what the president wants you to do. So you just really have to pick your battles, pick a couple things that you can do. And the, one of the things that has been floated that could be helpful is the kind of a change to the 1974 Budget Impoundment Act, which basically part of it says that if Congress allocates money or authorizes money for a particular program, the president must spend it. They can't, you know, take his pen to it and say, we're not going to spend it on this, this, and this, because Congress has already voted and it's been passed into law. So doing something about the Budget Impoundment Act would give the president then more budgetary control over the actual spending in the agencies. But boy, Congress is going to push back against doing something like that. So it's a tough thing. And this is why we've seen attempts to revise, to reform our bureaucracies for decades, going back to the 1920s, and it doesn't seem to ever work. The bureaucracy always manages to pull it out.
And that's a political science fact, like it or not. Sorry, that's the way it goes. Thank you, Andy. I appreciate your time. Have a nice Thanksgiving if we don't talk to you again. Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. When we come back, we're going to talk about insurance reform in Louisiana and also about the governor's tax reform plan.